Hello again, this is your girl Cheryl and the Old School News Crew coming to you with all the hot news of the day. And there is so much, as every week it happens the same. So much news, it's hard to keep up, hard to keep track, and hard to keep your thoughts straight. But we got some ideas that we want to share. So I want to introduce the Old School News Crew. Want to welcome Brooke Barrick.
Hey.
And we want to welcome Sheila Gaskins.
Hey y'all, what's up?
And we want to welcome Winston Thomas.
Good evening. Good evening.
Okay.
Cracks me up every time.
I know. I just have to give him his little
you
moment.
Sound like a bass guitar.
I know.
It's like Larry Graham all up in the place.
I know he practices that, you know. So I let him have his moment. But anyway, but so much is going on. And if you're listening and you have some ideas you want to share on some of the topics that are going on all the time, just email me at yourgirlcheryl@gmail.com and let me know what you want to talk about. And we'll invite you on and you can be a part of our discussion. Also to hear any past episodes of the Old School News Crew podcast, just go to yourgirlcheryl.net and there are some past episodes there. So it's the middle of April. Time is moving fast, but not that fast because we are finishing up the Derek Chauvin trial. It's about to go to all the evidence has been presented and all the witnesses and everything. And so it goes to the jury on Monday. And you know, I'm not sure what's going to happen. Does anybody have any idea what you think is going to happen?
I personally don't know what's going to happen, but I am so tripping on the fact that they have the military and they plan for like a thunderstorm to prepare for the verdict, no matter what happens. But yet January the 6th, you know, none of this was around or available.
Well,
so it's just crazy to me. I hope he gets convicted of something. And how long does America have to act like Black people are not human?
What's even crazier is to carry on off of Sheila's point with regard to how long, you know, is America going to keep acting like we're not human? It's like after this trial got started, all the police across the country done lost their damn minds. You had the dude down in Virginia get pulled over. You got the 13-year-old boy who just got shot, although they're trying to justify that one. Yeah, it's a catchy one. But you got Dante Wright who got shot. I mean, it's just like pop, pop, pop. Like they're trying to get it all in before this whole verdict comes through.
But let me ask you, do you think if Chauvin is not convicted of any of these charges, what do you think will be the results? I mean,
people are going to lose their damn minds.
I mean, do you think there'll be violence, or do you think Black people, people just say, you know, this is what we figured and just let it go? Or, I mean, really, what do you think the outcome, the result?
Same thing that always happens. Same thing that always happens. Sure, there'll be some unrest for probably a good week. And then life goes back to usual, business as usual, until the next one. It's pretty simple.
Yep.
Well, the only reason why I don't think that it'll be that, I don't want to say mundane or that typical, is because when the George Floyd thing happened, the result was different than any other time. You know, you've had police killings in the past, but that one went across the world, okay? And it went on for a really long time, you know, because it was just so overt. So I can't imagine that if they don't convict this man, that it'll just be a little, I think it'll be a major revolt.
Now we saw it, you know, the first time is always, you know, the most memorable time, that's done. Now it's actually old hat, believe it or not. That's how desensitized we've become. People are tired of it. They're ready to move on to the next, you know, the next tragedy.
Plus they are already prepared. They got, you know, they got stuff boarded up. They got the National Guard, they got tanks. So, you know, whatever comes, they are definitely prepared to wait it out.
Yep.
And part of that is because they got double duty going on with protesting, because, I mean, we're talking the same city, six blocks away, Dante was shot. And so while they're waiting for the outcome of this trial, people are still waiting for the charges to be upgraded for the police officer who shot Dante Wright.
But I wanna sort of stick to the Chauvin trial, because I think the fact that this has been a different kind of trial than the rest have been. And they're actually even considering reopening the Tamir Rice situation, you know, because they're starting to see how really unfair these, I don't know if these reactions or these—
Starting to see, huh?
Yeah, how, you know, yeah, you would think, right. And, you know, and I think number one, the way that this trial has gone with all of the other police officers, his superiors, also, you know, going against him. And I mean, this is a different kind of trial. We, you know, we'd never had a video of the actual crime this clear and this Rodney King sort of, but this was different. And I just don't think it's gonna be the same old, same old. And I can't imagine, I'm not saying that anything will change, but I just don't see it being the same old, same old.
Well, I hope it's not the same old, same old, but even when they were getting the jury, they were asking stuff that was like sideways that pointed to him possibly walking when they were selecting folk. So, I mean, those 12 people have to make a decision, and they might make the same decision.
Because if this man is not convicted, who would get convicted? You know, it's sort of like, I remember Michelle Obama, somebody when Barack was running the first time, and she said, if not this man, who? I mean, if this man can't win the presidency, if this Black man can't win it, who is gonna win it? Because everything was positive in his favor, you know? And sort of the same thing with this. This man is killing this man in our face. We're watching it for 10 minutes. If this video doesn't convict somebody, I mean, even though I thought the Rodney King one should have, but this one is even more overt. Well, and if this one doesn't, I don't know what you would have happen in order to ever convict the police.
Well, in answer to Michelle Obama's question, Trump, you know, killed her, okay?
No, she was asking about a Black man.
Yeah, I know. Okay, but I was just, you know. This country is just insane. We have to accept that. I know it's a different crime, but in terms of how we respond to things, when the school gets shot up and the little babies get shot up and still no major response, there's nothing this Black guy getting kneeled on is gonna do, you know, to turn the tables. It really isn't.
Right. I am blown away. I actually agree with Winston again. Oh, because
Brooke, you're gonna have to stop saying that like that's a weird thing, because you and Winston are starting to agree a lot more lately.
Well, what it has to do with the origins of and just sort of the DNA and tapestry of this country. And again, I keep hearing people say things like, this is not America. Well, to heck it's not. It's always been America. I had a friend of mine whose entire family is just as military as you want to be. Father made all of the children, female included, be in ROTC through college because that was mandatory. They had to serve the country, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the siblings posted on Facebook about how bad it's gotten in the United States. And he doesn't understand how things have gotten to the point where humans feel like it's their right or their, you know, it's becoming normalized to point a gun in other humans' faces. And he's like, why is that? And I went, well, let's see, because the Second Amendment is second only to the freedom of speech. Like, it's being able to carry a gun, people hold, is second only to be able to open their mouths and express their opinion. And then followed by that, the land was taken by pointing somebody's gun in somebody's face. And we were enslaved by somebody pointing someone's, this nation is what it is simply because we point guns in people's faces. I don't understand why people think that this is a land that is equitable and free and all of these wonderful things other than one that generates money by taking it from other people.
Now I understand that point, but in essence, but you know, to be clear, the it's a right to bear arms. It's not the right to put a gun in somebody's face. Those are two different things. And your friend had a legitimate question. What is making us put a gun in somebody's face?
You know? We never didn't put guns in people's
face. No, but that's not what the right is.
Founded that way.
But the right is to own it, is to bear arms.
But Cheryl, the reason that right is that what it is, because people recognize that in order to create what this nation is, they had to point a gun in someone's face to take it.
Right, exactly. That's the point. So that's not a given. You know, the given is that, and that's what I would want to know. What is it that makes us have to take it? Why do we always have to take it? You know?
This is gangster's paradise.
Yep.
Okay, that's what this place is. We've listened to propaganda since the time we could walk in a school. You know, we sing the anthems. We say the pledge to the flags. All that's propaganda to justify total gangster activity. If you look at the history, everything this country's based on was the same things gangsters do to take over turfs, drug territories, same exact moves.
Ding, 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 ding. Like I always say, the military is the world's largest gang.
Well, that's true. I mean, I believe that to be true. I had to think about it a second, but I believe that to be true. But if you go back, I mean, before the military per se, discovering America, Columbus discovering America is about putting the gun in somebody's face and taking something. You know?
I was about to say, before the military, what are we talking about here?
Right.
That was military too. Them guys on the boat, they were military.
No, that's why I was trying to say they didn't come here as the military. They came here as anybody who wanted to come to America. You know,
and that word discover, more propaganda.
Right, exactly.
People were already here. They didn't discover nothing. They came to conquer. They were conquerors. So
that's just an Anglo-Saxon.
Yes.
It's just a spin for your educational purposes, for entertainment purposes only.
So is that one of the Anglo-Saxon traditions that
Congress? To lie?
Better know it. You better know it. It's a way of life.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, George Washington had wooden teeth.
Yeah. I mean, but that's a characteristic that I don't know that white America claims that often.
Because they don't know. Well, some of them don't know.
I mean, by using words like discover and things like that, that's sort of soft peddling it. But in actuality, them, you know, going around taking.
They're in conflict. They're in conflict. They messed up and started believing the Bible and got guilty about their ways. Had they stayed pure, man, this thing was.
No. Winston. They don't feel guilty about no daggone food.
There's a portion of it. That's the only reason we sit free today. There's a portion of it that got guilty about the way they were treating us.
No.
Wait a minute, us who? us who are you talking about?
The African.
Who got felt guilty feeling?
There's a portion of white America that felt bad. They believed.
Oh, you mean
the
like
Bible.
The abolitionists? Yes. Are you talking about that?
Yes, yes. Oh, that's okay. The only reason any of this went down. Guilt, white guilt.
No. You guys
explain it. Explain it otherwise.
Well, you guys should see the film that on Netflix right now with Will Smith, and it talks about the 14th Amendment. And it's a really good piece of work because they talk about a lot of stuff. And they talked about how Lincoln, he really was not trying to free slaves. What he was trying to do is keep the Union unified. And so he had a meeting with the freed Africans and the freed slave and was like, hey, I need y'all to go somewhere else. I was thinking maybe y'all could relocate to Central America. And the Black people and Frederick Douglass were saying, no, 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 we're not the reason for this. And so then he said, all right, if y'all gonna stay, then we need to fight. So all I'm saying is that he was not, he did not have the notion of, hey, I'm gonna stop this cruel thing. He was just trying to keep.
Well, let's keep in mind, it's a movie. Let's not assume it to be.
What's a movie? What's a
documentary? What you're talking about? It's a movie. They weren't there.
No. This Will Smith thing is not a movie.
No, what I'm saying is Will Smith wasn't sitting there listening to Lincoln.
But that's not the point. The point is that Lincoln was not in favor of freeing slaves first.
And we know this how. That's my question to you. Now, how do we know that?
Research.
Right. Oh, hold it. Wait. Thomas, I think what she was trying to say is this is not a feature film. It's not a, it's a documentary.
I understood that.
It's a historical piece.
Right. And
somebody,
it's a
people research this.
I understand. I'm telling you.
Just like any other piece of history, we don't know. But listen, that's my point.
That's my point. Let's stay loose on this. Let's not assume this stuff to be ironclad factual. That is history. Well, that is his story.
Here's
the thing. You're also questioning Winston by saying that it was white people who felt guilty. So
I'm going by observation.
I'm
going by observation
of white people feeling guilty.
Oh, you saw white people back in the
day. No, I'm talking about now. I'm talking about even now.
What?
I said I'm talking about now. What is
Christians
so
that are feeling guilty? That's for daggone fool sure. So it What's ain't it? The Bible that's making them feel guilty.
What's it?
But moving right along with regard to the guilt thing, the reason that the North was pushing for the abolition of slavery. Yeah, you had a few little clusters of abolitionists like the Ellicotts and the John Browns and the whole nine yards. But at the end of the day, the real push towards abolishing slavery was not about guilt. It was about breaking down the Southern wealth and dominance, because there was already all of these underpinnings, and they were trying to keep the balance of wealth between the North and the South. The money was in the South. Period. End of story. Because the plantations were rocking it. And by freeing the slaves, it gave the northern states more power to distribute the wealth from the South throughout the states. That was one of the big things that was the toss-up between the contention between Alexander Hamilton and Thomas Jefferson was the whole distribution of wealth, where Alexander Hamilton was coming up with a financial system that was all about the banking and the whole nine yards. Thomas Jefferson was all about the plantations. And the wealth was being built in the South. And what ended up happening was, because of the Civil War and the redistribution of wealth, they actually shifted the wealth of the nation from the South to the North during the Civil War.
And let me sort of say here, because we're about to shift to a new topic. All history is not just based on thought where you can say we weren't there, so we don't know. Some things you do know. Some things are facts because they're based in actual documents, or it's not all, just guessing at what we think happened.
I understand.
So I just want to sort of put that out there. The second thing is, you all have totally gone from the discussion of the Derek Chauvin trial, the slavery. I don't know how that happened.
It's actually related. But, it's actually very much related.
What I really wanted to get was a sense of where we thought this trial was going and what would be the result, because what's going to be the future as we're seeing all these other police shootings and things like that, where do we see this going in the effort to try to defund the police and do all these other things to make things better? We're sort of going, it could go in the other direction if this man is not convicted. And then we have all these other incidents coming up that are sort of lending to that kind of thought. But I want to sort of move to another topic that's not really so much another topic, because Brooke, you've brought this up a couple of times as far as another way for our society to function, the whole Ubuntu philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and we have a guest who's going to come on and talk a little bit about that, because some things are going on in the Baltimore area that are bringing this more to people's attention. So we want to welcome, let's see, are you there?
Yes.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, Cheryl, how are you?
I'm good. We're welcoming to the podcast, Mama Kay. How you, everybody calls her Mama Kay, but it's Kay Lawal Muhammad. And I've known Kay and Rashida for years through WombWorks and even before, actually. But this new, now, and I wanted to say, Brooke, do you all know each other, Brooke? Do you
know?
Okay. Brooke has been talking about Ubuntu for a while now on some of our podcasts. And mm-hmm. Sheila brought up this whole topic last week about it as well. So something seemed to be going on. I think it was earlier today there was an event.
That's right. We had an Ubuntu circle today, and it was exciting that people that were been involved with emotional emancipation circles, psychologists and so forth, invited community to be a part of these circles.
So could you explain a little bit about what it is and what it's about? Like I said, Brooke has brought it into our discussions a couple of times, and her and Winston sort of go at it. I think they're on sort of opposite viewpoints, but
really?
If you could talk about it a little bit,
the emotional emancipation circles, they were originated by the Community Healing Network. And all of them are psychologists and they work in the field of Black psychology. And they all were working on breaking the lies of white supremacy and Black inferiority, and began to create these circles that one was able to share openly about elevating from the horrors of racism, and how took on this as a very serious cause for us as a people, and for us to begin to elevate together, to be able to communicate in some ways that would help to elevate us, to enrich ourselves as a community, to build ourselves as a community. And the reason that it was so important to me, I didn't know about them until we had a brother Gray was murdered by the police. And I was so devastated during that time with the riots and everything, and so many of my students involved in stuff, and you know, worrying about them, and you know, the legalities of everything that they were, we were just drained. Freddie Gray, you know, the whole Freddie Gray thing. And I heard about emotional emancipation because I was exhausted, really. And
so is that what Ubuntu is? Emotional?
Well, it's like a part of that. Doesn't go as deep as the emotional emancipation. It's kind of like, if you would, an introduction. And I really should have invited somebody here that, that the folks that started it, I could have invited them to come along so they could talk, and I will give you their information so you can have them on. But the Ubuntu circles are kind of like an introduction to the emotional emancipation circles, that go in a deeper dive. The emotional emancipation circles go into a deeper dive, where the Ubuntu, just gets people like orientated that have an interest. And then you can go deeper and deeper in the emotional emancipation circles, go in deeper. And it's a longer commitment. Mm-hmm. To coming together.
Let me ask Brooke, because you brought this up a couple of times in some past podcast discussions.
Oh, I hope I'm correct.
Mm-hmm. Brooke, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Right. And I'm not sure if what we were talking about before you came on, Kay, was the Derek Chauvin trial and whether or not he's going to be convicted of killing George Floyd and what could possibly happen after that if he is not. But Brooke, when you've brought this to us before, is this the kind of, it seems to me that you were, part of it was about a different way of looking at solving certain kind of problems.
Yes.
And instead of this being maybe a violent response that we might have.
Right.
Or you tell me, am I going in the right direction?
So Ubuntu literally translates to mean I am because we are.
We are.
And so it examines the interconnectivity of all humans.
That's and right. So
our experience, like everything that we're about, should not just be about ourselves as an individual, but what we can give to the community. Because you can't, and you know how they, like we end up doing the seesaw thing in the United States where it's either about yourself or it's about the community. Where Ubuntu really sort of embraces that everything you do should be simultaneously for yourself and for the community.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, then it's out of kilter. And so the idea is that when you do things for good, you do it for the good of all. And that as long as anyone is suffering or in a poor space, then we are all suffering and we're all in a poor space. And so until we can, as a species, basically come together and get ourselves together and eliminate all the isms and make sure everybody's fed and clothed and has, you know, access to things, and we are working to better humanity, then we all fall short. Like, nobody is truly successful without everybody being successful.
So I guess that takes me back to the Chauvin thing, because Winston and I were talking about this earlier. If this man is not convicted, and the world who watched this thing on video, who all believe he should be guilty, okay, this whole idea about defunding the police or changing how police function or how we're being policed or any of that, how is that ever going to, is that something that Ubuntu could even address? Is that even possible? Because clearly we live in a society that's not accepting us working together in that way.
Yeah, can I get in there? It's funny, yeah, Cheryl and I were talking about this earlier, and I came up with one of my famous analogies. Brooke and I are never actually in opposition. The things both young ladies, Brooke and our guests, the things they're talking about are the way man should aspire to be. I can't deny that. That only makes common sense. Of course, the world would be a better place with the philosophy and the thought that Brooke is talking about. The only point I try to make, and I made this point in my analogy, I see it as being enclosed in a cage of 100 baboons, and you have a bunch of bananas. Now, of course, Brooke's philosophy is that sharing should be taught at that point. And there's many benefits to sharing, and possibly all baboons could get a little piece of banana. The problem is, and this is what I'm always trying to point out to Brooke, the baboons might not believe what you believe, and you need to have a plan for that. That's where we sit in America. Yes, we know how mankind should be, but we're living on Planet of the Apes, and they do not believe what we believe, and you're gonna have to deal with them.
Well, and okay, this is where you and I actually disagree, because again, this goes back to, are we really dealing with Planet of the Apes, or are we dealing with a few flying monkeys that are making things appear that way to the point where we're terrorized? If we can collectively as a society, work with other people to get them. And it's not about the guilt perspective, Winston, but like you said, what I'm talking about makes sense. And if you can talk to people enough to get them to make sense, yeah, you're going to have your few. Just like I was giving you the analogy the other week about, you know, 95% of Black fathers are present in their children's life, and yet 67% of Black children are raised without their fathers. How does that happen? Well, it happens because you got 5% of the Black men out there procreating at a higher rate than the other 95%. So you have fools that create the terroristic society. But at the end of the day, what you need is to get your numbers together. You know, it's like, I'm still blown away that Amazon didn't get a union last week. Like, this collective bargaining thing, we can't get people to think together. And that's where the problem is.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask Kay. In the event that you all had today,
yes, ma'am.
Did it address that at all? Did people sort of come at it from that way?
The thing about the Ubuntu, I wasn't at all the circles. Remember, everybody had different talked and discussed different things. In each of the circles. So I'm not certain if that was delved into in some of the circles. It may have been, depending on what they discussed. In our circle, they really were talking about our levels of anxiety, our levels of personal levels of being challenged in how we were handling things emotionally, where we were. I don't think we had a lot of time, but we were really delving into that element of where are you personally with the effects of all of the trial and all of that. How are you really? Mm-hmm. And how is it affecting you? They kind of went from that approach. Time was of the essence, but I think it was a time of people opening up and letting go of how mentally and psychologically they were dealing with it. Mm-hmm. On top of us, due to Corona, us being kind of, you know, in separate, you know, we're not out and about, you know, a lot of people were going through things just from that. So mm-hmm. I think it was just a personal delving into where, how are you really, you know, based on what's going on, you know, and I think they took that perspective for today.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask, do you think it's possible, and this is for anybody, do you think it's possible, because Winston and Brooke are talking about, basically, people have to be on the same page, okay, to make any kind of change, and Winston is saying that people are not on the same page, and they're not going to be, and Brooke is saying that she thinks it's possible for them to be. Is that right? Would you say?
That is correct. I think there's always going to be two worlds. You're going to have good, you're going to have evil. I do not believe the good are going to talk the evil into being good with them. No, there's going to be opposition because that's the way this whole thing is designed.
Interesting. That's what I said. So people are not on the same page.
Oh, I don't think people are ever going to be on the same page. I just don't think that the different pages are as black and white as conquer versus conquered. I think there's so many different possibilities and schools of thought that once they all start to come to the table and have that discussion, which really would be, you know, sort of part of the spirit, but. And when I say have that discussion, I don't even mean it like, you know, we're all sitting around the table and having a conversation. I mean, as we start to observe different things and things start to shift because things don't make sense. And I'll give you an example. Like when you're in business, right? I'll use an analogy at Winston. But like when you're in business, right? The business owner is trying to make a dollar. And so when you try to convince the business owner to do something that they don't see as, you know, obviously profitable, you got to make your argument for return on investment. And at the end of the day, this continued, like the way we're going, whether it's with war, whether it's with, you know, capitalism or whatever, just like it, there came a time where slavery didn't serve the people in certain, the majority of white people anymore. They abolished it. When things start to shift and people see things differently, like this is no longer serving us, then they make a different decision.
Notice what you said. They decided. It wasn't
I'm not saying they white people. I'm saying they people in general.
I'm saying they. Yeah, okay. Well, we know who was doing slavery. It certainly wasn't the majority of us.
No, I understand that. But it's the same thing with, like, if I'm talking to a group of you know, headbangers on the street, if I'm having a conversation with them and I can convince them that the way they're doing things is not going to get them what they want and it'll probably get them dead. And then I can show them another way that actually turns out more in their best interest. I mean, I don't know what that is, but then they stop doing whatever that is. And I've had enough experience working with kids to know that you can sit down and rationalize with a lot of people and show them something different and change their perspective.
I find that's true if you have control of them, meaning a controlled environment, a cell, etc. Yes,
nope, I just find a listening ear. I just need a listening ear.
Yeah, but I'm saying to get that, follow me. When you're dealing with a, for lack of a better term, a savage, you can't bank on savage behavior. That mindset is totally opposite of yours. So to think that they're going to sit down and listen to logical, intelligent conversation and reasoning when they are the total opposite, you're at high risk. Yeah, if you can chain them down somewhere and have them listen to your lecture, yeah, you got a shot. But otherwise, you're probably going to be slaughtered. And history pretty much shows us that's the case.
Well, first of all, let me just say, Winston, the only way to sit down and lecture somebody isn't the only way to change their mind. But before we move forward, I wanted to introduce another guest who just came into the call. And I know she's probably like, what the heck are they talking about? That's not what I thought we were talking about. But I want to introduce Rashida Foreman-Bay, who works with Kay in WombWorks. And we started off talking about Ubuntu and sort of how we can incorporate that philosophy more with all that's going on today. As you can see, Winston is not always a fan of that approach. And so, you go ahead.
It sounds like, I could be wrong, they'll correct me. It sounds like that's more of a coping mechanism, all right, than anything else. So far that I've heard, you know, she talked about the emotional effects of all of this on certain people, and I assume Black, so it doesn't have to be Black from what I've heard so far, but that's what that is. People who are having problems coping with this environment. I say there's all types out here. Some people are having issues coping, others have accepted and, you know, are on their own path and dealing with it in their own ways. I'm probably one of those. My attitude is pretty much like it is in the boxing ring. Protect yourself at all times. That's essentially how I see the world. Protect yourself at all times. Your enemies might come in any form, Black, white, or other. It makes no difference to me. I'm protecting myself at all times.
Well, you know, in the midst of, I can understand that, but we're not on this thing alone. We are a group people. We are connected. We connected even whether we want to be or not. In the midst of in the midst of even this, you know, what we have going on right now. First of all, you know, race is like, to me, you know, race, you know, the whole idea of race is, you know, just a whole system put in place to keep, so it, for me, it's a war strategy. you know, and it was put in place to keep, you know, those few people who have lots of money in place and to keep and to consider that. So the whole idea about the hierarchy of race was put in place for this purpose, and to keep that small percentage of people who are in charge of money in charge of their money, and you know, forever. That's what their plan was. So, and I know that in order for you know, us to be connected, I mean, in order for us to get up out of this, we have to have strategies for that. And part of, and if you are in, because this is like being in a war, it really is. And if you're in that, you have to have strategies. It's like you saying fighting, Brother Winston, you have to have strategies to prepare you for that. But strategies come in all kind of ways. Strategies ain't always with this. Not that I don't mind a little fisticuff though, because I think that might be a part of the strategy. But it's also even reclaiming our children. Even, I don't know who you was calling savages. I don't know if you was talking about white people or if you was talking about, I don't know who you were talking about.
Any savages. Savages come in all forms.
Okay, well, I know that I'm gonna speak about Black people right now. I know that in order for us to, we have to psychologically, there's been some deep psychological damage and trauma that we have gone through as a result of racism. It was put in place to do that. But in this lie of Black inferiority, it wasn't, you know, this lie was spread for over 400 years. We started believing it, and white people believed it, of course, and we started believing it. But it's a lie because it, and in the place of that, a lot of people suffered. Black people certainly have suffered. And but white people have believed a lie. They're misinformed. And so they are part of the strategy. They don't even know that the people who are in charge of the money, they don't even care about them. They'll take out a whole bunch of poor white people because it serves their purpose. So
let me ask you something though, Rashida.
Right.
Just starting right there. And believe in the lie and that kind of thing.
Yes.
We can't even get people to acknowledge that Trump losing the election wasn't a lie. Okay. And there's, I mean, straight up evidence to that. Is it possible? I mean, do you think it's possible to get people to stop believing the lie? Because I don't see us being able to move forward without that.
Yeah, I understand. And let me tell you this. See, I have to focus on, and this is the deep part. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're going to have to go talk to their own people. I am very, very concerned about our children and our families and our mothers and our grandmothers and how they're going to fare right now. Because if we don't care about us, nobody will. We can't depend on other people to come and shift this for us or do this. We have to be in charge of this like that. We have to go into our communities, and it's not, you know, just one person that can do it. It is everybody in their own way doing it. We do have to be very intentional. And I do think that in order for, the start is, how do you feel about yourself? Do you love yourself enough? Right? Because most of our young people, and even most of the little brothers that we see, you know, our little corner brothers, right? Most of them, it has to do with how do you feel about yourself and economically, right? You know, because most of them, if you give them a way to make money, right? Most of them ain't even going to be on the corner doing what they do. Most of them are going to want to make, because they make, sometimes them young folks want to make enough money to buy outfits sometime until they understand more. You understand? So we have to reach back, and we had systems in place in our own traditional society that prepared young people for manhood and womanhood. It was rites of passage. We got to reach back and get those systems back in place again, because the system that's set up right now, it doesn't work for us. It's not even set up for us to even to elevate from it. The judicial system, all of that. I mean, you know, ask any lawyer, any judges, the ones who are in there who will really, really be for real. The whole system is not set up for us to be okay. It's set up for, we 12% of the population, and, you know, this large percentage of us that are incarcerated, it's imbalanced. So how do we do that? We got to start with the little ones and their parents.
Okay, and my question is, and I pose this a lot of times on a podcast, regardless of what the topic is.
Sure.
How do we do that? In a big sense, how do we do that? Because I know that's what WombWorks, the organization that you and Kay have, that's what you all are all about. So I know that that's what you all do. But
that's in a small way, but in a large way, we have to begin to create think tanks where we as organizations come together.
Right, that's my question.
Together and begin to strategize, because, you know, even the, and I'm talking about if you, I'm just gonna focus on my own people right now, because I know that, you know, and not that I'm not concerned, but that's gotta be my first concern. Charity begins at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
So starting here, you know, and other white people or other races who are, and I'm talking about people of color, but other races who are conscious and aware, go to your family and work on them, right? Because if we don't start really loving ourselves and helping our children to really know who they are and to really love themselves, because it all starts with self-love. So the problem is, you know, and so once we're able to do that, and then organizations got to come together. If you have a business, right? That business, part of the business thing, you know, is to go back into communities and train some other young men about how to run a business, how to do construction, how to build. We got to learn how to build again, learn how to make things, learn how to do things with our hands, creating more, all of that. And there are people for everything there is, how to feed ourselves, everything. And if there are people in our race who know how to do all of those things really well, who are experts, who are masters at all of these different things in order for us to survive, going back and helping this one. Because it was a time, even politically, when, you know, you hear about all the old timers like Judge Howard and all them folks, when they all helped each other, they got in huddles. One person would help the other person, you know, to win. They were strategizing then, you know, and now, you know, the crab in the barrel thing ain't working. And doing it like the other people do it is not working. And you ain't gonna be able to do it individually. Because if the thing, right now, if a whole flood come through our community, it's gonna force us to help each other, you know, and I'm gonna have to jump in. And, you know, even the person that you might have thought was a savage might be the person that, you know, saved your life. You know what I mean? And you know, there are ways we have to not think that we cannot save our folk. You know,
I think that people, because actually one thing that I've noticed, particularly over in, I know this has been going on because my father used to do this, even though he came from a rural community in Virginia.
Yes.
In the city here in Baltimore, but he maintained a garden, a vegetable garden. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't at our house. He had to go somewhere to have enough land to do his garden. And now I'm noticing there are a lot of city gardens and community gardens where older people are teaching younger people how to grow their own vegetables and fruits and things like that. And it's speaking directly to what you're talking about taking care of ourselves, or people teaching others, teaching younger folks. And so, but it's, you have to look for it. You know, it's real hard to find a lot of those kinds of things. You have to sort of either know where they exist or look for it, you know. So trying to, but that's what you're talking about as far as, you know.
Exactly.
And Winston, and I just wanted to say, and Winston, to your point, I know you're king of analogies, but your baboon analogy was quite striking. But I was also thinking of the analogy of, if we were all, and because this is actually true, this is not even really an analogy, but if we were living on an island, and a small island, and in order to survive on this island, you know, there's only but so much ground that can be where food can grow. And there's only certain areas where you can fish for food. At some point, everybody's gonna have to work together in order for everybody to survive on this island. if the people who live over where the fish are only fish for themselves, and if the ones who only do the growing only, you know, then it's everybody's going to perish. So at some point, everybody's going to have to work together. The bigger that island gets and the more diverse the people are, the harder that gets to do. But that's the effort that we're talking about here. That's what we're trying to see if that's what can be accomplished.
And I'm going to
I appreciate your baboon theory, but I'm sorry. What'd you say, Rashida?
I said, I agree. I mean, you know, and see, and then what happens is once our charity begins at home, as human beings on the planet, we can't survive without each other. And I'm talking about every human being, right?
Please.
But so that's the bigger picture. I mean, but we have to focus right in our communities, right where we live. There's some, and there's wisdom there. And I'm glad you shared that. There was an old man that told me, he said, you know, we one year had a garden. He said, oh, them young people don't want to grow nothing. They're too worried about their tennis shoes. Mm-hmm. I said, no, we Mr. Shorty. And he taught these young people how to grow stuff. And I can't tell you, it was something so deep that transformed inside of them, because they saw something grow from a seed. It was so powerful. They felt empowered because here I can take a seed, and out of this seed, I got something that I can plant. I mean, that's growing, that I can eat, that's gonna feed me and sustain me. And they got it. And they got it in the deepest kind of way. You understand? And then Mr. Shorty was empowered. He said, wow, I got a chance to share my wisdom and my knowledge with some young people, and they got it. And we had to do different things to get them to want it, because now we don't have a thirst for it no more. We don't even have a thirst for all of this for me is a part of the war strategy. All right? Because we at war here. Okay.
No, I understand. Because actually, I know another youth program out there, Unique Fabrics, mm-hmm. and they actually teach young people how to sew.
Yes.
Almost like a lost art, you know?
Yes.
And I've been over to where they, one of the sites where they were teaching, and they had mm-hmm. all these sewing machines, but they only had about 4 students in there. And I would have thought, because I've seen young people in clubs that do fashion and modeling and all this other thing. So they clearly have an interest in clothing and all that. But so it's just an idea of sharing the information or letting people know that, because I say this all the time, I don't have kids, so I can't speak, and I don't work directly with kids that often. So, but it would be my thought that, like you said, for young people to learn how to grow their own food, make their own clothes, they don't have to do it, but knowing how to do it, you know, has to empower you in some way.
It does.
I have to say,
go ahead, Winston, I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, please know, I agree 100% with everything that's being said. I'm not saying any of that is out of line, shouldn't be done, it's true. My only point is that the locusts will still come. Yes, we know how, we need to learn how to grow food and everything vital to existence. The youth are the key, I get it. Except evil is not going to sit down and watch you work. Evil's coming. We've seen it time and time again. I hear the stories about the wonderful things Blacks have done in Tulsa or wherever it was, I forget, it escapes me. I've heard Rosewood, we hear all the historic situations where Blacks were doing things exactly as you described, vital, minding our own business, growing our youth, being very prosperous, whatever. And what happens? We need to be ready and have a plan for that. It's my only message. So we're not in opposition here.
Good point.
Okay.
I agree, sir. We got to be prepared.
Yeah, I think, I know we give Winston a hard way to go and maybe make him the boogeyman sometimes. But I mean, I know that you're in agreement, and particularly with what Rashida was saying, when she was talking about a war strategy. But I think your point is well taken sometimes, Winston, as far as I think you just see the effort being difficult. you know, you're identifying the
I'm just going by the track record. That's all. That's what you hear. I see what the right. track record has been.
Right. And it's, and again, it's like the half full, half empty kind of glass. Some people would say, you know, okay, we're going to fight this war. Yeah, it's a war. We're going to fight it. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. And other people would say, you know, our enemy is out there and we got to do this and we got to, you know, so it's just a different approach. Your approach is acknowledging our opponents a little bit more strongly. And some of the other things that we're talking is probably a little bit more optimistic. I think that's sort of the real difference in how we're looking at this. But you know, I think what I just want to see, and I know we always ask, you know, what can we do and what are we going to do? And everybody can do their own little part, you know, here and there. But some kind of way, it's got to be on a, just like they're doing the coronavirus vaccinations. When they decided that they were going to vaccinate these people, they made that thing worldwide, okay? They had to take that not just giving the vaccinations, but sharing the idea that everybody has to take this. They had to get their PR strategy straight. They had to get that message out in a certain way. And it's on that level that we need to get this message out in that certain way, that we can fight what's coming at us and fight it in a way that we are empowered and that we're in control of it and that we can move forward with it in the ways that we want to. Because something you said, Rashida, about not just changing the current narrative and not just creating our own, but you also mentioned getting rid of the one that we currently have, because that's not working. And that's a real important way of looking at it. Sometimes our podcasts are only about an hour long. And so we've come up on our hour. And, I hate to, unless it's anybody, I don't want to cut you off totally. Does anybody else want to add a little something just before we
close? I did want to say one thing, and it went back to what Mama Rashida was saying about, because doing it their way ain't working. And I recently, based on an argument I was in regarding chattel slavery, and I hate it when people equivocate like slavery that existed before European slavery with European slavery. Both of them were wrong, don't get it twisted, but chattel slavery was a completely different beast. And part of the reason that it was a different beast was because of the inhumane nature of it. And the fact that the European model of slavery saw people as property. And that was not like it was before, where as opposed to being seen as conquered people who were a part of a society, but they were forced to be a part of a society, European chattel slavery saw people as property. And upon further research, discovered that across pretty much the entire continent of Africa, less was about the ownership of real estate and land and property as much as it was about the ownership of that which you produced. So production and service were the things that were valued, whereas land and chattel were what Europeans valued. So you've got two completely conflicting systems of economic and governmental theory underlying the whole dang fool thing. And where people who were enslaved were considered a part of a society that helped the society to grow and broaden in the United States, that's not the way it was seen, nor in all the other European versions of chattel slavery. And so what I think I said this a couple of weeks ago with, you know, how Black people like to look good and smell good and have the fancy cars and the whole nine yards. And I wondered if that wasn't a part of the fact that, you know, Black people were owned by slave owners, and slave owners had to have wealth in order to own slaves. And so we saw wealthy things and we wanted wealthy things. And so we started to buy into that. And we bought into the weaponry and the warfare and the gangs on the street. We need to disavow that whole system of thinking and philosophy and being. And that's the way we defeat it. Winston, you once talked about people, you know, not allowing themselves to be enslaved. Part of that enslavement is of the mind and of buying into that system that
they're perpetuating that war, that this is our educational system, this is our stratification, this is how we conquer. Africans weren't, I mean, it's a different way of being. Ubuntu is a different way of being.
And I'm really interested to see it be applied. And if the small island is Baltimore and certain communities in Baltimore to start off with, and it grows out from there, that'll be interesting to see if that's a successful way, a successful approach. So I want to thank, Sheila had brought that, well, actually, like I said, Brooke had been talking about this for a while, and then Sheila brought this to our attention, and I want to thank our special guests, the call-ins, Rashida Foreman-Bay and Kayla Muhammad. So now you got something to say, Sheila.
Who you at? For having us, thank you. This was good.
We'd love to have you back at any time. To talk about this or anything else. We talk every week about just things that are affecting our world, whether it's here directly in Baltimore or around the country or around the world. And so much is going on so fast, it's hard to keep up. It's hard to stick to one or two topics in one podcast. So, but I appreciate you all being here. I want to thank the Old School News crew. I want to thank Brooke Barrick.
Hey.
Sheila Gaskins.
What up?
Winston Thomas.
All right, have a good week.
And Mike Easterling came in sort of late, but I think Mike just listened to us for a while. So next time we'll have a little bit more of Mike's contributions. How you doing, Mike? We're glad to see you, though.
Mike took a nap.
You're muted.
His alarm clock didn't go off.
We can't hear you.
You're muted, Mike.
He's still asleep.
Okay, that's not working. All righty. So again, thank you to our special guest. And anyone, whoever wants to talk with us, just email me at yourgirlcheryl@gmail.com. Let me know what you want to talk about and we'll put you on. And if you want to hear any older podcasts, just check us out at yourgirlcheryl.net. There's some old episodes right there. You can hear some past discussions that we've had. So once again, want everybody to have a fabulous week. And thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you out there. Bye-bye, everybody.
Peace.